You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
And welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we broadcast every weeknight. That's Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here at our flagship station, the Global Star Radio Network. That's the place to be. Of course, Global Star Radio Network hosts some of the most popular shows on the planet. Common Sense Show, of course, Ted Brower. Many others. Russ Dizdar. I could go on and on, but you get the idea, folks. Now, we're also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio. You can watch us live and by archive as well on our YouTube channel. The links to each audio and video broadcasting venue can be found at our home base right here on the internet at HagmanandHagman.com. That's HagmanandHagman.com. You have to spell it all out. And don't forget, we've got two separate websites, one for the show, as I indicated, HagmanandHagman.com. The other for news and information, that's HagmanReport.com. Bookmark both. And I'm Doug Hagman at the helm, again with fellow investigator, researcher, and, of course, my son, Joe Hagman. We are what I like to call the America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Now, you may notice tonight, ladies and gentlemen, that we are audio only on YouTube. Yeah, that's right. Well, here's the deal. You know Eric the Tech has off tonight and then Monday. And our second in command in the technical arena, of course, he's got his own business and he's tied up with that tonight. And we just decided to let this run audio only. So and so basically YouTube, the chat's been disabled. The audio is available on YouTube, but you're not going to be able to see our beautiful faces. And you know what? We're all dressed up in suits too. why is that? That's because actually we are suit-like people. Anyway,
we have a great show planned for you tonight. Dr. Ted Brower is our guest. His website is healthmasters.com. I want to have a quick announcement first. Folks, AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com is doing an amazing special. I'm not sure how many people remember the 360 servings month food, 1 month worth of food, Linden Farms for $360. But American Survival Wholesale is running a special tonight. They are offering Linden Farms 360 pack that is, listed at $432 and $360 on American Survival Wholesale. They're taking $100 off for 3 days only. You will not find a lower price on the planet. However, you must use the discount code Hagman to get this price. Again, $260, 3 days only, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, on the Linden Farms 360 pack by using the discount code Hagman.
I'm going to tell you this right now. I am ordering one of these. Now, I talked to the owner of American Survival Wholesale, and don't forget, ASW, American Survival Wholesale, is veteran-owned, Christian-owned. And I said, okay, I'm going to order one of these, actually two, and I'm going to use the discount code Hagman. He said, no, no. And can't do that. No, I'm kidding, of course.
I talked to Chance earlier, and he was telling me how this pack is earthquake-proof with sackable lids, airtight, watertight, so you can bury this in the ground if you wanted to.
You can find it in the earthquake-ravaged rubble, I'm sure relatively unscathed, right?
Yeah. So, again, go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. It is the three-day special with Linden Farms, 1 month emergency food storage, 360 servings of 2,000 calories, 9 different delicious meals, $100 off using the promo code Hagman for Friday, Saturday, and the special ends Sunday at midnight.
And we're serious. That is a great buy. I mean, that you cannot find.
No, you can't.
It's easily worth 1.5 times that, and they've got it down. Don't forget Hagman code, as you sir, the promo code Hagman. Now, tonight, folks, have you noticed, just very quickly, can you feel it? Just stop and think for a moment. Here we are. Now, it is June 10th, 2016. A year ago this month, a Obergefell decision. Opinion, Supreme Court was rendered. Think back in the run-up to that decision.
It's been a year?
Yeah, well, a year at the end of this month. Think back to the run-up to that. All right. And the feeling of, you know, oh, this is going to be bad. And of course, it was. And many people have spoken about, well, this is going to lead into other perversities. And it did. But, folks, the incestuous nature of this opinion and how quickly, I guess the real story here is this. The other side, the opposing side, the perverse side had their ducks in a row. They had their tactics and game plans done long before that decision was ever rendered by the Supreme Court. So as soon as that hit the mainstream, they were able to implement successfully and effectively many plans, many of their schemes and machinations. And that's why we are where we're at right now. And I was talking with Greg Jackson earlier today, and he said, you know, we know how the story ends, but we have to still have to play the positions, and we have to get in the game. All the Christians have to really, we have to get in the game, and we have to take up the mantle of we have to saddle for battle. We really do. And he's got a lot of good information, you know, that he shared with me, and you've heard it, but you know, we know how the story ends, we do, but that doesn't mean that we've got a pass to be spectators. Now, our good friend Dr. Ted Brower is going to be joining us tonight. The reason that we're having him on again tonight, this is at our request. I mean, he's making a sacrifice to be with us tonight because, in going over all, John, going over all of this information as we do triage of the headlines and analysis, our own analysis of the geopolitics, and even getting into what's how it affects us physically, emotionally, we need some triage, and one of the best people I know to give us triage in current events is Dr. Ted Brower, healthmasters.com. That's healthmasters.com. And I subscribe, we all subscribe here to his newsletter, which is extremely informative. And we need his take on the headlines,
the health plans, news, geopolitics. Yeah, and Ted always does a great job of show preparation and content. So, Ted, I'm going to turn it over to you. Welcome back to the Hagman and Hagman Report. It's great to have you on.
Oh, well, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Doug. It was great listening to your introduction and your commentary. And yes, it's always my pleasure to be on your show, and it's always my pleasure to give you my opinions. The good news is, I was going to tell you the guys is off the air, but I might as well just announce it now. Todd was able to finagle the schedule a little bit around, And I'm going to actually have my show played after your show Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. after your show goes off the air for your, when you're finished.
Wow. Wow. So you, basically, I'm never going to leave the studio then. That's it. Okay, I got Rusty for you.
I wanted to share that with you guys. That just happened today. And so from 10 to 11 Eastern, after your show is completed, we'll be back on Global Star with a repeat of my show. It won't be live. It'll be a repeat. In the evening, from what Austin and I did from 3 to 4 that afternoon. And this evening, we're going to talk about the rape crisis in Sweden, how it's getting worse and worse, plus a plethora of other stories. That's going to be at 10 o'clock. So you guys, I'll be able to promote your show every night, every day, when I'm on my show, because my show starts after your show, live in the afternoon. So I'm excited, guys. It's going to be a really good synergistic effect for everybody. So I'm just excited about that.
Well, isn't it? I mean, Ted, we need to turn up the amps, the voltage. We need to really kind of keep getting the news out there, and that's really. Thank you, Global Star. Thank you, Ted, for doing this. I mean, we really need to do this.
Well, to me, you know, me, you, and Dave Hodges, you know, we've got a really good synergistic relationship, and we're all supporting each other. And so it's a real blessing to me to be on your show. And, of course, you come on my show on a regular basis, and that will be after your show. And plus we're in the afternoons from 3 to 4, so it'll be great. But I want to cover a couple of things very quickly that I have talked about repeatedly on your show, but I never gave any details, primarily because I just kind of skimmed over because I assumed that everybody knew it. Then a week or so ago, I covered some of this material on my show, and we got just inundated with emails of, why didn't you cover this earlier? I didn't know this is what happened. I didn't know how this all tied together. Now I understand. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Treaty of Versailles in 1919, who was in attendance that day. And also, I want to talk about the Balfour Declaration, and I want to talk about why Israel and Saudi Arabia are such good friends and how it's all tied together. And Joe, you're an expert in this too, so please, if I miss something, just correct me and say, hey, Ted, you need to throw this in there too, or add anything you want to do to it. Is that okay with you, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely.
And folks, this is so important. You know, Winston Churchill said, the further back you look, the further ahead you can see. All right? And this is exactly what he meant. And Ted is, I would say, an expert in this particular area. And I don't, not in a legal sense, but expert in the sense to convey, understand and convey the importance of this relative to the context of today's events. So take it away, sir.
Well, my mother was born in Germany in 1916, you know, right before the Treaty of Versailles. My grandfather was born in Germany in 1884, so he saw the whole thing. And so my mom and my grandfather, and my father also, you know, who was born in the United States in 1901, used to always tell me that, you know, the stuff that they were telling us at the school wasn't true, or it was partial truths, which that doesn't surprise anybody. Now we know that's the mantra of the central bankers. That's what they do in their takeover of the United States in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. In the same year, of course, we got the IRS and the income tax. And this has been an ongoing plot that the central bankers have had for centuries, ever since the Rothschilds were brought into the Sabbatean cult by Jacob Frank back in the 1700s, and now they're basically just a bunch of Satanists is what they are. And I mean, we all know that now. It's not anybody's trying to hide that. Stanley Kubrick, he did a big reveal on them with the movie Eyes Wide Shut. Now, I don't recommend you seeing that movie on video or renting it on YouTube or not on YouTube. Won't even play on YouTube. It's just like R-rated, or even playing it on Netflix. You're going to have to get that one edited. That one's got some pretty graphic, nasty stuff in it. You really don't want to see that one, you know, unedited. But what happened was interesting in 1919, because Germany came to the aid of an ally when the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated, and we can talk about who did that at a later day, because that's all part of this plot. And Germany was dragged into this war and actually went into it willingly because they were the aid of their ally, but they didn't start it. And then at the end of the war, Germany started having a whole bunch of problems with communists coming in to Germany, the same ones that had caused the Bolshevik Revolution that was funded by the Rothschilds. Now, what's interesting about all of this is they started shutting down munitions plants and the plants that were producing the armament and the guns and everything else that Germany was using in the war. So it causes giant stalemate in 1919, 1918, as far as the amount of armament that Germany could actually deploy to the Western Front. When the armistice was basically declared, there were no troops fighting on German soil. People need to be aware of that. And the Treaty of Versailles was supposed to be a treaty of peace, not an unconditional war surrender act by Germany. Now, what was interesting about this is the people that were behind the Treaty of Versailles that was signed on June the 28th, 1919, was basically the work of the international bankers. They took all of the measures, which is the Rothschild family, they took all of the measures necessary to ensure the next World War, which would be World War II. The Prime Minister, Lloyd George, wrote, the international bankers, this is the British Prime Minister, the international bankers swept statesmen, politicians, journalists, and jurists all to one side and issued their orders with the imperiousness of absolute monarchs. Upon returning from the unsuccessful peace conference at Versailles, President Woodrow Wilson stated, there's a secret force at work in Europe which we were unable to trace. Now, he's lying about that. He knew who they were, but he didn't want to disclose the fact that he had already signed up with the devil with the Federal Reserve Act. And, of course, that was the Rothschild clan. They dominated the conference. The American President Woodrow Wilson was advised at Versailles Conference by Bernard Baruch. The Prime Minister Lloyd George was advised by Alfred Milner, Rothschild employee. Sir Philip Sassoon, a direct descendant of Mayor Rothschild, the French leader. George Clemenceau was advised by the Minister of the Interior, George Mandel, whose real name was Jeroboam Rothschild. Fritz Springmeier, the Illuminati bloodline, from the Illuminati bloodline. The interpreter was Mantow, and the military advisor was Mr. Kish. Interesting, all the advisors were mostly representing international bankers. These men met at 6 p.m. and basically decided the future of the world. Germany's territorial losses from World War I, from the Treaty of Versailles, due to the international bankers, hacked Germany up like a carved goose. It was cut into several pieces and gifted to other countries. A piece of Germany, Alsace-Lorraine, was given to France. A piece of Germany, Saar region of the coal mines, was forcibly brought under French protectorate. A piece of Germany, Eupen, Malaby, Moresnet, and St. Vith, was given to Belgium. A piece of Germany, Northern Schleswig, was given to Denmark. Pieces of Germany, Holstein and Opava, were given to Czechoslovakia. Several pieces of Germany, West Prussia, Danzig, Posen, Upper Silesia, were given to Poland. And this just goes on and on. Also, there were territorial losses of Austria-Hungary. Habsburg's empire was cut up. Austria was cut up. Hungary was cut up. And what ended up happening, all the states of Eastern Europe became hub of a large national minorities. Again, they were breaking up national interests, and like Trump says, I'm a nationalist. They were trying to destroy all that. 1/8 of the German population found themselves in the newly created countries as minorities. So, give you an example, in America right now, you know, if we had, 17% or 16% of the population was suddenly moved into another country, you know, it would be tens of millions of people just be moved. Reparations. And this is the thing that, Joe, that most people don't understand what happened. The total sum due to be paid by Germans as war reparation was decided by an inter-allied reparations commission controlled by the Rothschild Bank at 269 billion gold marks. Guys, that's the equivalent of 100,000 tons of gold. I'm going to repeat that. Germany was fined 100,000 tons of pure gold as war reparations in the trillions and trillions of dollars. Impossible to be paid back. Because remember, Germany can't just print its own currency. Of course, the Weimar Republic showed that it could, trying to pay back this horrible, horrible debt. Wilson's former aide, and a lot of people believe Satanist, Edward Mandel House, president of negotiations with Bernard Baruch, wrote in his diary on 29th of June 1919, I'm leaving Paris after 8 fateful months with conflicting emotions. Looking at the conference in a retrospect, there is much to approve and yet to regret. You think? It's easy to say what should have been done, but more difficult of way of finding a way to do it. However, to those who are saying that the treaty is bad and should never have been made, that it will involve Europe in indefinite difficulties in enforcement, I feel like admitting it. Okay, so he admits it. Before World War I, Barney Baruch was worth $1 million. After World War I, he was worth over $200 million. Upon returning from the unsuccessful peace conference of Versailles, President Wilson again stated, there's a secret force at work in Europe, and we are unable to trace. That was a lie. He knew who they were. Now, what's also interesting, when Germany signed the armistice On November the 11th, 1918, its armies were still on French and Belgian territory. Furthermore, on the Eastern Front, Germany had already won the war against Russia and concluded with the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk. In the West, Germany had seemed to have come close to winning the war with a spring offensive earlier in 1918. Its failure was blamed on strikes in the arms industry at a critical moment of the offensive, leaving soldiers with an inadequate supply of material. The strikes were regarded by nationals as having been instigated by the international banking cartels. The bankers, the Communist Party who was involved in this, led the revolution in Germany during 1918 and 1919. They left Berlin, once a symbol of power and splendor, to them in total ruins. It goes on to say that Berlin had become the center of the communist social democratic movement and the trade union movement. It became headquarters of the Social Democratic Workers' Party, founded by a militant Marxist group formed by Karl Liebknecht and Rosa Luxemburg. The war effort in Germany was finally hampered when 300,000 workers in all of its armaments factories went on strike during the middle of the war in January 1918 due to the influence of the Communist Party. Later, there was a naval mutiny and a strike of dock workers. Finally, on this November the 9th, 1918, Philipp Schneiderman, the left-wing leader of the Social Democrats, proclaimed the first German Republic from a window of the Reichstag building in Berlin while the heroic German army was still in enemy territory. The Kaiser was forced to abdicate in November of 1918, and the government was taken over by the communists or the social democrats. The banker leader, Friedrich Ebert, was installed as the first president of the Republic. After the armistice, Berlin was in total chaos. The city resembled a war zone with the communist revolutionaries fighting in the streets. The German nation was led to believe the Treaty of Versailles and negotiations were to be a conference for peace, not unconditional surrender and the carving up of Germany. On June 28, 1919, Democratic Weimar politicians, socialists, and communists then signed the Treaty of Versailles. That's what happened, according to my mom and my granddad and a whole bunch of other history experts. Joe, I know you must have something to add to what happened to Germany with the Treaty of Versailles and how that precipitated World War II.
Well, there's a whole lot there that you just covered, and the some of the quotes from the leaders at the time. There's a document from a report of the Palin Commission in August 1920 that talks about quotes from President Wilson. He said he brushed away all doubts as to what was intended from this point of view. And this is to the Balfour Declaration in March 1919. He said to the Jewish leaders in America, "I am moreover persuaded that the Allied nations, with the fullest concurrence of our own government and people, are agreed that in Palestine shall be laid the foundation of a Jewish commonwealth." Also, Winston Churchill spoke of a Jewish state, and a Mr. Bonar, the law, talked about Palestine being restoring Palestine to the Jews. And what happened with Germany, World War One, and it was not accomplished with World War One, which led to World War Two.
Yeah, can I sneak something in here? Des Griffin, a historian author, described the First World War from the viewpoint of the power brokers, the Illuminati. Let me just slip this in here. There are three things that happened that involve Israel, the United States, and the entire process. I think this is so succinct. Three things. Number one, America's policy of isolationism, neutrality, expounded so eloquently by George Washington in his farewell message. Everyone remembers that, about we should tend to our own affairs. And further mentioned or given official expression, shall I say, in the Monroe Doctrine, it was murdered by our actions. A precedent was established through this twisted deceit of the power base for America's use as a military tool in the hands of the international bankers.
That's
the
right.
The second thing, real quick here, is Tsarist Russia, which was always a thorn in the side of the monetary monopolist for a number of years. It had been successfully removed from the world scene, which was forecast 47 years earlier, folks, by the top Illuminist Albert Pike in his famous letter to Mazzini. And the last thing, and I'll say, and I'll shut up, World War One created this astronomical number of national debts in the nations which participated. And these debts were held by the international bankers who, as we have seen, they organized and stage managed the show from start to finish. The theaters of war have always provided this extremely lucrative area for to their managers and those who finance them. And the Treaty of Versailles, of course, was based entirely on the plans of the Rothschild family and, right, and Amschel Rothschild and such. But on the American side, the Rothschild puppet Woodrow Wilson, his advisors, including but not limited to Colonel Edward Mandel House, who I believe you're correct when you research him, the author of Philip Drew Administrator, by the way, I will say, in my opinion, the Satanists, and of course, you mentioned Bernard Baruch, the English side, of course, was the Crown, Lloyd George, and the Committee of 300, Sir Philip Sassoon, which, again, a direct descendant of Amschel Rothschild and a member of the English Privy Council. France had Prime Minister, what was his name, Clemenceau, I believe, and George Mandel as a delegation. So all of this, you're exactly right, and that set the stage for not just the Treaty of Versailles, but for the establishment of
Israel. Yeah, it led to different coalitions, and there was, you know, a German-Russian coalition, or a German coalition that was anti- Israel, anti of breaking up the Middle East, and you had the Ottoman Empire,
right,
the breakup of the Ottoman Empire, and it really, between the Balfour Declaration and the treaty, it rearranged the face of the Middle East.
That's right. I'm gonna cover that next, okay? Okay? And the reason I wanted to cover this tonight is, you know, I've gotten emails in, well, you know, you say that Israel is a fiefdom of the Rothschild Empire. It is. I mean, there's no other way of looking at it. It's what it is. And see, and so you have to understand it. That doesn't mean that God can't use it in the end times prophecy. I didn't say that. I'm just saying where it came from and what happened to the Palestinians and what's continuing to happen to the people in the Palestinian areas there that are still basically in a concentration camp that we don't want to talk about. So now let's talk about why Israel, which is primarily Jewish, and Saudi Arabia are such good friends, because it ties right back to the Rothschilds' ownership of Israel and the Balfour Declaration and the formation of Saudi Arabia. And Joe, you've talked about this a lot already. I've heard you talk about the show. Here's the interesting article. It says, why does Israel and Saudi Arabia have a snug and cozy relationship? I mean, why are they best friends forever? It seems odd to me, this author goes on, but this is not titled, that the Zionist regime of Israel, holding such an antagonistic presence towards Arabs in the Middle East, would be friends with arguably the most powerful Muslim nation in the region. And they have common enemies such as Iran, the Hamas, the Hezbollah, the Muslim Brotherhood. And so it goes on to what you just said, Joe. The defeat of the Ottoman Empire by British imperialism in World War I left three distinct authorities in the Arabian Peninsula, Sharif of Hizah, Hussein bin Ali of Hazi in the west, and Ibn Rashid of Ali in the north, and I've sought of Nahid in the east and his religiously fanatic followers, the Wahhabis. Okay, on these three, Britain got the most help in World War I from the Sharif of Hussein, who led the Arab revolt against the Turks and helped the British defeat them. After the war, Hussein was hoping the British would keep their word and agree to the establishment of a single Arabian country from Gaza to the Persian Gulf. However, Britain, under the control of the Rothschild Empire through its banking system, as it has done many times in the past, did not keep its promises. Instead, along with France, it drew up the Sykes-Picot Agreement in 1916 and issued the Balfour Declaration in 1917, which mandated the establishment of a Jewish Zionist state in Palestine at the prompting of the Rothschilds. This is just history. The Sharif was not happy and told the British that he would never sell out Palestine to the Emperor's Balfour Declaration, that he would never acquiesce to the establishment of Zionism, imperialism in Palestine, or accept the new random borders drawn across Arabia by the British and French imperialists. At this point, Lawrence Arabia, or T.E. Lawrence, was sent to this area by Churchill and was dispatched to bribe and buy Hussein. When this didn't work, he turned to threats, which were also echoed by Winston Churchill, who was then the colonial secretary Remember, they're all answering to the Rothschilds. Both men threatened to unleash Ibn Saud and the Wahhabis, who they were arming and funding, which they did. Okay, within weeks, the forces of Saudi and the Wahhabi followers, you know, overthrew these other guys. After losing Mecca, Hussein had fled and lost his entire country to Ibn Saud, the ancestor of the current Saudi lineage. Sharif Hussein was forced out of Aqaba, a port he had liberated from the Ottoman Empire during the Arab Revolt. Ibn Saud had begun his siege of Jeddah in January 1925, and the city finally surrendered in December of 1925, bringing an end to over 1,000 years of rule by the Prophet Muhammad's descendants. The British officially recognized Ibn Saud as the new king of Hijaz in February of 26, with the other European powers following suit. The new unified Wahhabi state was rebranded by the empire in 1932 as the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. This whole thing was put together through the Rothschild family, and that's why the Rothschilds and the Saudis are neck deep in all of this mess, because so many of you just don't understand the linkage here of how this happened. So much, you know, for the history of Israel and Saudi Arabia, that's how they're tied together. Now, if you fast forward to the Zionist regime and corrupt human rights abusing kingdom, now we know with Saudi Arabia with all of their beheadings, you start to understand how they're tied together. So this is what I want to share with you guys tonight. This is why Israel and Saudi, they work together all of the time. They work together with 9/11. They work together with the taking down of the trade towers. They are constantly working together because they were both put into place and both these countries were developed by the Rothschild banking empire. Now, Joe, if Doug, if I've missed it or if I've overstated something, please correct me.
No, you stated it very well, and especially the point about Britain selling Palestine, really,
right.
And the Rothschild, the Baron family, their involvement was just as deep as the puppets who announced the agreement. I mean, what you're saying is true. It was Walter Rothschild, a British Jewish leader in the British community, and the movement of Zionism through Britain and Ireland, what the Balfour Declaration was. And it laid out exactly what they wanted to do and how they wanted to do it. And
yeah. Please, people, do not equate this with anti-Semitism.
No, this is history, guys. This is history. It's just history. And then the reason I wanted to bring this up tonight was this. People are always asking me, well, why do you say that Israel's a Rothschild fiefdom? This is why. Because it is. Now, there's no other way about that. That's why I say we should pray for Israel. And I believe Israel's going to be used very, very strongly in the end times, just like the Bible says it's going to be. But this is how it came into play. This is what happened and how it got there. Years ago, I was on a cruise ship, Joe and Doug. I'll never forget this. This is back, oh God, this is 15, 17 years ago. And there was a man who was from Britain. And we talked to him. He was a really, really nice guy. He was in his mid-70s at that point, close to 80. Really good shape. He shows up for the first formal night, and he's wearing a full-blown military British uniform. Full-blown military uniform. Got a picture of him somewhere. The guy was just absolutely articulate, super well educated. And so I asked him, what war or any wars were you involved in? He was involved in the war in Palestine back here, all the way back, okay? This guy was that old. And when I started asking him about that, he got into tears. He literally teared up. And he goes, I can't talk about it. And he goes, what we did to the Palestine people as an officer in Great Britain, and the 100,000 people that we murdered and their families that we murdered to establish the state of Israel and do what we did to Palestine is unforgivable, what we did to these people in this area. He goes, we murdered them by the tens of thousands, women, children. And he goes, all under order by our government. This is the guy who was there. Now, you think, well, that's horrible. Well, it is horrible. But see, here's the thing, guys. You know, these guys don't think a second about sicking the United States, which is their military arm now, of the Rothschild banking cartel, to go kill a million people in Iraq, or to go kill people in Iran, or go wipe out Libya, or to go wipe out Egypt, or to go wipe out Syria. guys, you got to get to the head of the snake here. We've got to get the central bank that's been put in here into the United States. We've got to nationalize their assets. We've got to stop all of this nonsense that they've done to the United States with this giant debt they've given us. And we've got to step back and go back to the way it was, you know, before 1900. And we've got to realize that this international banking cartel has been up to this no good for hundreds of years. And this is what their goal is. Their goal is to bring in a one world Luciferian state that's going to worship the devil and have a one world religion. That's what they want. And guys, if I'm wrong, tell me, or just go ahead and clarify a little bit better than that, because I don't know how much more plain I can be than that.
Well, not to make any clarifications, but just so people understand that when this happened, when the State of Israel was instituted, there is a divide even amongst the Jewish community where you had two camps, two trains of thought. One was that their identity did not need to be part of a national homeland. And you have actual Jewish people who are against the State of Israel, and then you have those who are for it.
Against the establishment of the State of Israel. But to be clear, as it was carved out on the conference tables by the power brokers at the time. So, I mean, I understand that this is... I don't know, because we're going to get emails on this, and
I think the point is that it just speaks to the level of control of those who control the money system and the system of lawmaking, and even, you know, the Jewish people suffered under this.
Let me qualify one thing real quick. 99% of the Jewish people had no idea any of this was going on. Okay, this is nothing to do with any of these people. This is the satanic Rothschild family that did this. You know, they're the ones who set this up. And so you can't blame the Jews. You can't do that because they had nothing to do with this. The vast majority of them, like you said, have been scattered all over the world, and many of them felt they had needed no national identity. They were very successful in their own right in all the different areas and commerce and media and all the other things they were involved in. So they didn't want to be involved in any of this whole nonsense. They didn't want to be part of this. They didn't want this giant anti-Semitism to break out against them because of doing something like this. This was the Rothschilds. Because remember, the Rothschilds, they have read the Bible. And they understand that they want that Temple Mount back. They want to rebuild that temple. They've got all of this stuff done because they want to use the Spear of Destiny, which was recovered from Hitler, according to, you know, multiple, the TV show that we talked about. It'll come to me in a second. They said that they want to take that Spear of Destiny, rebuild the temple, go into the Holy of Holies, and they want to use that Spear of Destiny, which was used to plunge into Jesus' side, and basically spill the blood of their anointed one to bring in the Antichrist. That's the goal of all of this stuff. I mean, these guys are Luciferians, is who they are. They know the name of the power of Jesus and the power of the cross. They understand all of that. We've talked about that in detail. But again, you got the Council of 300, you got the Bilderberger Group, you got the Rothschilds, you got the Vatican Bank, you got up to 50% of the doggone priests in the Catholic Church now are pedophiles. You've got all these different people. You've got the Council on Foreign Relations, you've got the United Nations, you've got all the heads of all these governments. This isn't about, quote unquote, the Jews doing this. We gotta get away from that. And, you know, and some of the top people in the, you know, in the alternative news market, they try to emphasize that. That's not what we could do. It's not true. It's just that these are the people, these Luciferian Rothschild ones, are the ones who brought it all in. All of these guys that are involved in the Federal Reserve systems in New York, all of these guys are really, really bad news. I mean, they need to be taken out. Why are we negotiating with international bankers? They got a charter to run the Federal Reserve Bank, which has already expired in 1913. We should just take the money system and the banking system back. The problem is the money brokers that be have gone in now and paid off all these politicians, and there's no way it's going to happen. That's why they are deathly afraid of Bill Clinton, because he's a nationalist. They don't want a nationalist in the White House. They don't want a John F. Kennedy in the White House. They don't want a Ronald Reagan in the White House. They want a globalist like Hillary Clinton in the White House, like Obama in the White House. That's who they want. They want to get rid of the borders and have a global empire, a one world order, a one world government. That's why they're so scared of Donald Trump, because he's a loose cannon on deck and they don't know what he's going to do. But I want to clarify all that, because it's really important that we try to understand the history of what happened and not pretend like these things didn't happen, you know, almost 100 years ago now with the Treaty of Versailles, because it did happen, and you've got to look at history if you don't want to repeat this mess. But these guys have got to be taken off their throne of money and restored to where they belong. And if they want to do all this nonsense in Europe, let them have at it. But guys, I'm telling you, the United States is losing its sovereignty. And if Hillary Clinton gets into office, the first thing she said she's going to go after was the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is one of the only things that's stopping these guys from doing a full takeover of the United States. And that's just the way I look at this thing now. I mean, guys, if you see it differently than me, go ahead and clarify again, please.
No, absolutely agree with you. Trump is a nationalist. The Clintons are globalists, and we are moving in a direction of complete globalism, not only a global economy, a global healthcare system, and a global political system. This is why we see the Middle East breaking down and nations being labeled as rogue and enemies, is because it is part of the banking, central banking agenda to get all countries under the same.
They want their assets, and they want to put a central bank into Libya. And see, I mean, Gaddafi had already turned over his, quote, weapons of mass destruction, which was really stupid of him to do, because as soon as he turned his weapons in, he gets invaded. I mean, Hitler just takes them all out. I mean, he had complied with what they had asked him to do, because he knew what was coming. He had already seen what had happened with Saddam Hussein. I mean, you know, this is the problem. You know, we put all these guys in the power with the CIA, then we turn around, and if we decide we don't want them there anymore, we just kill them. And it's not us, it's the CIA. It's the Mossad. It's all of these rogue elements of the government that are doing this. I mean, Obama said last week at a big meeting, I think, up in Indiana, he said that the main problem that we have in the United States is basically conservative talk radio. I mean, he's saying that, you know, that you, Doug Hagman and Joe Hagman, me, Ted Brewer, Dave Hodges, Joyce Riley, you know, Alex Jones, you know, Savage, you know, Rush Limbaugh, all of us are the problem, that we make big government look bad, and big government is the answer to everything. No, communism and socialism is never the answer. Right now in Venezuela, the hospitals in many areas are without power. They don't have bandages. They don't have medicine. They don't have beds. People are laying out on the floors, bleeding out and dying because they were socialists. See, it doesn't work. It never has worked. Look what happened to the Soviet Union. Sure, it managed to go for a little while, you know, for 30, 40 years, and then it started getting in super poverty, and finally it just broke to pieces, you know, with Reagan. Because there's no way that you can take incentive away from people and tell them they can be part of the collective and have them still expect to work. It doesn't do that. Now I'm going to read you one more little thing real quick. And I want to say this one more. I read this on your last show three or four weeks ago. It said, the four horsemen of the banking apocalypse are Bank of America. These are all Rothschild banks. JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo own the four horsemen of the oil. ExxonMobil, the Royal Dutch Shell, BP Amoco, and Chevron Texaco, in tandem with other European and old money behemoths, i.e. the Rothschilds. But their monopoly over the global economy does not end at the edge of the oil patch. According to the company 10,000 filings to the SEC, the four horsemen of the banking apocalypse are among the top 10 stockholders of virtually every Fortune 500 corporation. It is well known that in 2009, of the top 100 largest economic entities of the world, 44 were corporations. The wealth of these families, primarily the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, which were funded by the Rothschilds, are among the top 10% shareholders in each of these, is far in excess of national economies. In fact, total GDP is around $70 trillion. The Rothschilds' wealth alone is estimated to be over $250 billion. So in the case with the Rockefellers, who were helped and provided money all along by the Rothschilds, the U.S. has an annual GDP in the range of $14 to $15 trillion. This pales into significance before the wealth of these trillionaires and quadrillionaires. With the U.S. government and most European countries in debt to the elite, there should be absolutely no doubt as to who owns the world and who controls it. To quote Eustace Mullins from his book, The New World Order, the elites rule the U.S. through their foundations, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Federal Reserve System with no serious challenges to their power, expensive political campaigns which are routinely conducted with carefully screened candidates who are pledged to the program of the New World Order. Should they deviate from the program, they will either have an accident, be murdered, be framed on a sex charge, or indicted in some type of financial irregularity. Guys, this is what's going on. It goes back to the international banking community. They're the ones that are, have done all of this, and this is what they're setting us all up for. So it's just really that simple. You say, well, that's simplistic. Well, no, it's not. It really is that simple. When Ron Paul and the guys ask Bernanke what happened to the $17 trillion, and he goes, well, I don't know, man. Well, I can tell you what happened to it. He said it to the European banking community. They bought up the stock markets all over the world, and they took those trillions and trillions of dollars, and now they own controlling interests in the Fortune 500 corporations. And see, this is what's happened. We have been jacked. We have been hijacked. The whole planet has been jacked by these Luciferians. And guys, it's time that we as Christians stand in the aggregate and say, no more. I mean, this is why we left Europe to start with, many of our fathers and grandfathers, because we wanted to have freedom in the United States. And we've been a huge stumbling block to the New World Order now for centuries. And finally, for the past 100 years, they've been able to get their claws in us and put us into massive, massive debt and control our political institutions through these unlimited amounts of money through these PACs that they feed into these guys to get them reelected. And so it's a major, major mess. And all of us need to realize that unless we as Christians stand against this, this is why there's an all-out assault on the Christian church, guys, because they want to silence the Christians. Because as we've talked about many times on the show, when you pray, you emit scalar waves, and you literally change the fabric of time-space. These guys do their human sacrifice, their satanic rituals. They have all those electronics all around us now trying to change the frequency of what we live in. All of this is to control the attention field, to control the fabric of reality that we live in. That's why they do all of this stuff, and these are the guys who are in charge, and these are the guys who are doing it. So it's really an interesting thing when you start digging into the history and going into detail like this with the Treaty of Versailles, and you realize that the Rothschilds were sitting right there signing these papers and getting these guys to sign and do exactly what they told them to do. Unbelievable that these guys wield this type of political power globally, and they have done so for hundreds of years. What do you guys think?
You know what, Ted, this is fantastic, because even if you bring it forward to today, and I mean today, literally today, as we speak, the meeting of the Bilderberg committee taking place in Dresden, Germany. Now, that is pretty much in response to, number one, the architecture for the one world monetary system, addressing the British exit from the European Union, and also really up there in terms of importance, also addressing the U.S. elections, presidential elections. So you've got all of this taking place today in the same format, using the same architecture, and in some cases, some of the same, shall we say, bloodlines, same families who were, you know, 100 years ago, doing the same thing today right in front of us, and no one is really getting the understanding of the significance of this, which is why we've got to raise the awareness in order to fight this. And so it's so appropriate, Ted. Thank you for bringing this out, because in order to understand today, you've got to understand what happened in World War I, II, you know, back in the beginning of the 20th century. And,
Also, Doug, you know, when Hitler had his enabling act ready to go in 1933 when the Reichstag fire happened, if you read Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, if you read Mein Kampf and you read his other book, the untitled book that he wrote, and I've read both of the books. Now, Mein Kampf, it got into a lot of political stuff with the communists. I kind of skimmed through that one. And what I realized was this. There was a major, major assault on Europe with the Communist Party for the Bolshevik Revolution, which was funded by the Rothschilds, which was sweeping the entire continent to bring it into a one-world communist government at that point. And Hitler writes about that extensively in his book and in both books. And what's interesting about that, you know, a few things Hitler did right. Okay, he threw out the banking cartels out of Germany, started printing his own debt-free money, was able to fight the whole war with no debt. He also basically nationalized all of their assets that they had stolen through the Weimar Republic, to the printing of money and trillions of dollars as they stayed in front of the inflation curve, which is the same thing we need to do in the United States. But then what he did, he went kind of berserkoid, and he decided he's going to create this fascist dictatorship with basically his Enabling Act, which is the same thing that we call our Patriot Act. If you look at the Enabling Act and you look at the Patriot Act, it looks like the same template was used to write both of these pieces of paper, both these, well, they're not pieces of paper, they're hundreds of pages, okay? And so this is the thing that people need to understand. These are documents that were put into place to enslave us. That's what the Patriot Act was all about. And it's so interesting how they had the Patriot Act ready to go right after 9/11. Are you kidding me? Was it over 1,000 pages, Joe?
Yeah.
I mean, how they write something like that in a couple of weeks, okay? But that was George Bush's knee-jerk reaction to force that. And then that was just a psychological warfare operations to try to force, because we were in this shock, the country was, to get Congress to pass that nonsense. And now we have that stuff hanging on top of us, and we wonder, what in the world happened to our rights? Well, this is what happened to our rights. In Oklahoma now, they're stopping people with cars who have, they think may have done some kind of crime, and then they have a scanner, and they run their debit cards through the scanner, and if they have any money in their account, they're automatically transferring the money out of their debit accounts at their banks and emptying out their bank accounts and telling them, hey, just in case you guys are not guilty, even though we're not charging for anything, you can try to file a lawsuit on us to get the money back. I mean, unbelievable. They're doing that in Oklahoma right now as we speak. Now, Hitler would never have done that to the German people. He would blush with, like, just embarrassment if you even told him what was going on. But this is the culmination of that police state. And now we're turning into a fascist dictatorship, and if we give the guys the chance and we put Hillary Clinton in office, they're going to be able to culminate this thing probably within 8 years, and we're going to end up with an America that we don't even recognize anymore, which has already happened under 8 years of this puppet Obama. But remember, Obama is not doing anything. Hillary won't do anything. George W. didn't do anything. His dad was a little bit involved because of the CIA. Clinton didn't do much. It was all the Rothschild banking cartels pulling the strings as globalists behind the scenes, knowing exactly what to tweak and who to hurt. That's who's running the country and has been since 1934, since the Exchange Stability Fund was set up and our gold was seized and that thing was funded by the Exchange Stability Fund. That's where the black ops money goes, and that's where the shadow government operates from. And people need to understand that it's all based on the Rothschild banking cartel. The Treasury became an arm of the Rothschild banking cartel in 1934 with the Exchange Stability Fund. And if you understand that and get your handle on that and realize that's when the coup took place after the United States was bankrupt in 1933, we've got to go back to that. And we've got to nationalize the assets of this banking cartel that has done its best to enslave every man, woman, and child in the United States, Doug and Joe.
It's fantastic. Now, I don't recall, and I'll say this after the top of the hour, there was a reporter who got into, I think did a 5 or 6 part series on the ESF, the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Okay, it's very important for people to understand exactly what that is, because you're correct, Ted. This is what funds, that is the mechanism for funding the New World Order.
The shadow government. That's right.
Exactly, the shadow government. And I just want to if I can, just kind of buttress what you said here with the information. Understand that following the Treaty of Versailles, the German development following that treaty was predetermined by demanding of Germany, as you had indicated, reparation payments of 123 billion gold mark and 26% per annum of the value of German exports. This was nothing less than
slavery.
Exactly, enslavement, right. And now, in the midst of that chaos, Germany issued a moratorium on all payments of all reparations for 2 years. Then, I'll tell you what, for extra credit, folks, if you really want to get into this, look into what Carol Quigley wrote in his voluminous tome about the New World Order, or about the historical book that he wrote, Carol Quigley. I'm trying to remember. I've got it in my office. I can't even think of the name. But also, not only that, the Dawes Plan, D-A-W-E-S, which was conceived by J.P. Morgan, the Rothschild henchman. Also, do research about the Dawes Plan, because that had impact into the monetary aspects of the Treaty of Versailles, Germany, and, of course, this Machiavellian system of which you speak. Sorry, I just wanted to thrust that in there.
And also, if you're going to do all, if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that homework, get the book, The Tower of Basel, about how the Bank of International Settlements, located in Basel, Switzerland, was originally set up for the war reparations to go through from the Versailles Treaty, and how it's morphed into much, much more than that. Again, that's another arm of the Rothschild banking cartel. So you've got to see the truth. Oh, by the way, it was Brad Metzler decoded the Spear of Destiny, where they talk about using the spear, rebuilding the temple, and basically spilling the blood of the Antichrist in the Holy of Holies. He talks about that at the end of the show. You can watch it for free online.
Yeah, I remember seeing that episode. It's a pretty good piece. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Friday edition with our guest, Dr. Ted Brewer. His website, healthmasters.com. He also has a show here right on Global Star Radio Network. We'll be right back with Dr. Ted right after these short messages. Stay with us.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.